Wat een vijf blij om aan mij te zien, je toch? Ik zie mijn ook vrienden naast me die procureren om hem. Welkom, Henk. Kreeg het dit soort dingen voor het goede dag achter zijn die zo lekker warm op. This morning we commence with the input from agri-ethics. And somebody wondered that it's not wise to insult the farmer while chewing. So welcome with you.
Good morning, Chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity. My name is Annelies Crosby. I'm the parliamentary representative for AgriSA. Next to me is Omri Kansal. He's the newly appointed CEO of AgriSA. Chair, but by way of a quick introduction for those of you who don't know just how AgriSA is structured, we're a federal organisation. We have 9 provincial unions that are affiliated to AgriSA, as well as 24 commodity organisations. We represent a diverse group of farmers, irrespective of gender, colour or creed. We have been supportive of orderly land reform for a very long time, and we honestly believe that equitable land redistribution is a prerequisite for rural stability seeking to improve development. We have certain general views on expropriation. I'm not going to spend much time on this. I'm going to highlight one or two. We believe that it should be a measure of last resort. And actually, this bill provides for that because it requires that negotiation takes place before an expropriating policy actually goes to expropriation. In favor of a fair procedure, there must be clear purpose for expropriation. And then recourse to the court is a critical importance to us, both in terms of protecting the validity, if there is reason to do so, and if there are disputes around compensation, to also take that in court. And that was what the respect debate was about with the 2008 bill, and why we believe it would eventually withdraw from the parliamentary process, is that the access to court was actually limited. The legal advice that we sought, and we talked to a number of lawyers, senior advocates, experts in the field of expropriation, they all assured us that as far as this bill is concerned, there is no limitation of the right of access to court. And then we believe that the regulation process should be transparent and professional, and that there's a fee in the typo there to be no deferred payment of compensation. Chair, then, also by way of introduction, we believe that this bill is much different than the Constitution. I referred to the 2008 bill, which is quite controversial. This is the vast improvement on that bill. And I really also want to applaud the Department of Public Works for all the process that they have followed. I just mentioned to one of the members here that AgriSA is involved in a number of policy practices with a number of departments. And really, this process, our experience was that the sample consultation that the department really, with the public comments that were received, as well as the NESAC process of which I was a part, did consider all inputs and made a lot of amendments already to the ball. So the areas of concern for the concerns that are left now are limited. There's an FAO document which deals with compulsory acquisition and best practice principles for compulsory acquisition, and it's at a fourth-stat document. It deals with things such as a due process and fair procedure, good governance, accountability and transparency, and equivalence of compensation, which is something that I'll come to back to later in the presentation, which we think is quite important. The concept is that the claimant people who are being expropriated should as far as possible be placed in the same position as that what they were if there had been no expropriation or before expropriation takes place. Just on a more of an emotional note maybe, I don't think anybody wants to be extra-reactive, even though I also think that there's a lot of unnecessary fear and panic out there about the context of expropriation and misunderstanding of what it means. I don't think anybody, even a member sitting here, would willingly choose to be expropriated. Because in the case of farmers, you know, when they get expropriated, they not only lose their homes, they lose their livelihoods, and they lose their links to the value chain. You know, farmer has a specific market where he's farming, and he knows the input suppliers and all of that, and if he has to relocate, then he lose all those linkages. So it's really the big disruption. And then the prospect of litigating against the state, I think, is a very daunting one for most people. In the specific comments here, I know what was said yesterday about the definition, so I'm not going to spend much time on that. For the expropriating authority definition is concerned, it seems that if the department should take that it is, in fact, properly aligned with Section 59 of the Constitution. There was a lot of debate on the public interest yesterday. It is a broad definition. We are also concerned about that. At the same time, you realize that it is very difficult to define because there are so many factors that can potentially play into it that can be considered to be in the public interest. Then, sort of part of the bill, which is about investigation and the gathering of information, we think that this is actually a critical part of the whole expropriation process, because the data that is gathered during this process will be used, amongst other things, to calculate the just and equitable compensation. And for that reason, we think that it should be professional people from different disciplines that should be involved in this investigation, and we name some of those professions there. Then, as far as the value of the authority to request documentation in the owner's possession is concerned, we just ask that it be done in a way that gives due regard to the owner's right to privacy, that it should be official documents, and that the owner should not be obliged to provide information that could compromise him when he's negotiating a price for reform, and that if he in line with the Information of Ashes Act of Information Act. In clause 5.5, where the owner is required upon request to provide the names and address of persons holding unregistered rights, we did raise the DMEJAC as well, Chair, and you'll see later on in the presentation with relation to section 7 and 8, it comes up again. The owner is required to disclose any information about possible unregistered rights on the land. And if he or she fails to do so, it's considered to be a criminal offence. Our concern is just that owners and farm owners particularly may not understand first of all what is included in the context of unregistered rights. So there may be people, for example, exercising some grazing rights or whatever, access to graves, that kind of thing, which they may not be to be an unregistered right in their understanding. So we just don't want the situation where an owner almost unknowingly then commits a criminal offence. So what we're asking for there is a sort of a hit list with possible unregistered rights so that the owner knows what kind of rights needs to be disclosed. Then, clause 6, we just say that we welcome it, that the municipality is consulted at quite an early stage, because we think they have a critical role to play with regards to new development. Regarding clause 8, the notice of expropriation, we welcome the detail in which the process is set out in clause 8. We particularly welcome the requirement that the Office of Conservation must be accompanied by documentation as to how the compensation is calculated. This is because our experience in the past of landowners having difficulty to get access to this information, particularly in the restitution process. Now, yesterday, again, a number of the commentators raised concern about the fact that expropriation takes place in principle before there is a determination of a possible dispute around compensation by the court. We specifically sought advice on this from senior counsel, and they referred us to the Apogee judgment, which is quite pertinent as far as this particular consideration goes. And what they said to us is that Apogee says that there are two possible scenarios. The one is compensation being fixed before expropriation takes place, and the other is that it's fixed after expropriation takes place. And I refer to specifically to paragraph 55 of the judgment, where Judge Bruno modified this, that the text of section 25 does not exclude an interpretation that compensation must precede expropriation. The language of the clause is compatible with the compensation being a condition precedent to a valid expropriation, but the opposite is equally plausible. So what I then said is that they should propose the following clause, which would deal with any risk of unconstitutionality in the implementation of the law, because of the fact that it cases for one scenario but not for the other. And I'm not going to read through that, but the wording is there, and it has been made available. Then clause 10, the verification of unregistered rights, which is saying in respect 10.5 that the expropriating authority determines that claim in respect of an unregistered right is invalid, that claimant must also have the right to approach the court for determination. Clause 11, the consequences of expropriation of unregistered rights. I've really dealt with this, Chair, with the repetition that I said earlier, is that the fact that the owner may not be aware and that we need to cater for that somehow. Clause 12, which is critical to AgriSA, that is the issue of compensation. And I know there's a debate yesterday again with some of the organisations that made petitions, some are saying no compensation, minimal compensation. Our position is the following. We say, first of all, no landowner should only benefit from land before. But at the same time, no individual landowner should be unduly penalised for something, and we refer specifically to land reform here, which is in the collective national interest. So all therefore land owners should not be overcompensated, but they should also not be undercompensated for their property. Now we acknowledge the Constitution fully, Section 25 fully, and we acknowledge that market value is not the only consideration. But in terms of the judgments that we do have, the one particularly where Constitutional Court has dealt with this matter in the 2A judgment, market value did still play a central role in that judgment. And there, this all started with the market value, because they said that that's the only factor of those listed in Section 25 that can be determined independently. And then they looked at the other factors and how they played into market value, whether they had the ability to adjust the market value or not. So we accept Section 25 and the just and equitable principle as the basis for compensation, but we also subscribe to this principle of equivalence, which is an international best practice, which is recommended by the Food and Agricultural Organization. It's described in their report as follows. They say that affected owners and occupants should neither be enriched nor impoverished as a result of compulsory acquisition. Financial compensation should be on the basis of equivalence of only the loss of land. For financial compensation on the basis of equivalence of only the loss of land really achieves the aim of putting those affected in the same position. I explained to you that a farmer not only loses the land, he loses livelihoods and linkages to the value chain, and there are lots of costs involved in moving. For example, if you have livestock and you have to get trucks to come and transport your livestock, there are consequential losses there. So there's strong arguments for compensation to improve the position of those affected wherever possible. So we believe that adhering to this principle of equivalence will result in the most just and equitable outcome for all parties involved. We see land reform particularly, and we focus a lot on land reform, Jefferson, because you know that our members own a lot of land and they heavily invested in land. We see it as a national priority, and therefore we believe it should be funded by general taxpayer money. Individuals belonging to a particular industry, in this case the agricultural industry, cannot be expected to bear the cost of the national priority. Land owners' land is earmarked for agricultural purposes, but therefore be placed in a position to continue farming elsewhere should they wish to do so. Then, Sulatium, we know that Sulatium, or in Afrikaans, Tonheld, is explicitly excluded in the law, which says that the property is taken without the consent of the owner, that should be taken into account when compensation is calculated. We would like it to be taken into account. So we propose that that clause be deleted, exactly because it's expropriation is a very traumatic experience for anybody who needs to go through that. Then, as far as interest on compensation is concerned, we believe that it should be called 15, the rates of that which is described by the PSMA, or the rate that is payable by the expropriated owner in satisfying the debt secured by the land. So 15 offers of compensation. There is a deeming provision in Clause 15 that we consider to be problematic. And that is where an offer is made and the owner does not approach the court within 60 days, then he is deemed to have accepted the offer. We were advised by senior counsel also that 60 days is actually a very limited time if you have to litigate, and that the deeming provision should be subject to the right of the court to override it in appropriate circumstances. Then Clause 17, is where the bill proposes that 80% of compensation be paid when state takes position. Our view is that there's no reason why it cannot be 100%, particularly in cases where it is clear that there are no outstanding debts as far as municipal accounts, etc. are concerned. Clause 18, property subject to mortgage bonds or deed of sale. I know the Banking Association raised it yesterday as well. Agriculture is heavily reliant on breeders, and we recognise the legitimate right of bondholders to be compensated. But we do not believe that the right of bondholders should outweigh the interests of land owners. There should be a fair balance as far as that is concerned. So expropriation should not lead to the insolvency of the landowner because the compensation is not sufficient to satisfy both the loan and allow the landowner to walk away with some compensation. So there must be an apportionment of the compensation between the landowner and the financial institution. And here, this really illustrates the problem if we are going to deviate substantially from market value, particularly in situations where there are bonds, is that we can end up in this kind of situation, which might not have been a fair and equitable result at the end of the day. We deal with further with the balance that should be struck between the bondholder and the landowner. But basically, we support the wording of Clause 18 as it currently stands, because it allows for that there be agreement, and if there isn't agreement, that the court decides at the end of the how that apportionment should then happen. So we're saying there that land is often formed as single greatest capital asset, as well as the only source of income. If the compensation received is significantly less than the outstanding loan, it can result in the landowner ending up with more debt than assets and no form of income to repay the balance of the loan. And that's a problem for the financial institutions as well as for the industry, and it may have implications for future financing of the debtor as well. So, yeah, I'm not going to repeat myself. Let's say just to say we support the wording as it currently stands, and we're in favour of that equitable balance. Then Clause 21, which is about the determination of the court, we believe that there should be unrestricted access to court to contest not only the amount of compensation in the dispute, but also the merits and the scope of the expropriation itself. And we believe, on our understanding of the law, it does cater for that. But it might allay some of the fears out there if it would be stated explicitly in the bill that there is also access to the court in the case of the dispute about the merits of the expropriation. And then we believe that some consideration should be given to voluntary alternative dispute resolution because of the cost aspect that can be prohibitive. If there are disputes. So that is something that can maybe be considered. Clause 26, the expropriation register, we propose that expropriation registers should be open for public inspection and that this should be expressly stated in the law. This will also have a DBA fear of managed expectations of land owners. Then just for those confusing things, there's a big expectation, I think, out there that this bill will speed up land reform efforts. And I think we do need to caution that international experience shown that that's not necessarily the case, that it may not be as significant. But we really recognize that in some instances it needs to be used as a measure of last resort. And it's a necessary tool for governments all over the world to expropriate. And we also have a long history of expropriation in this country. What is actionable decisions on selling process and market-related compensation that must ensure an equitable outcome, recognizing the decisions of the G25C. Having said all that, we do believe that this is a substantial improvement on the 2000 and at all. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for your input and opportunity for members for comments, questions, to probe areas that are not too intimate.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question is about clause 18. I'm not very clear on what Agri Esa is actually saying there. In one way, it is identifies the big problem about the bondholder and the owner of the land. But then on slide, what slide is it? I don't know the page number. It says it supports the winning of clauses 18, 1 and 2 to ensure that the owner and the bondholder for and to agree on appointment, apportionment, phrase which is determination is made by a court. Now that is actually part of the problem that the landowner does not necessarily have the money to go to court. And the question is then still, if the court determines that there was a contract and the owner is still liable for the outstanding amount, then we're going to get exactly what Agri Esa is actually in a certain way is against, that an owner can go involved. So can we just get a more clear explanation exactly what Agri Esa wants with clause 80? As far as the bond and the bondholder and the owner, please.
Hi, thank you. Honorable Victoria, followed by Honorable Vitali, and Baba Masan.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for from the president. First of all, what I want to find out from Agriculture of Africa, through their presentation, there's nothing that has been said about the farm workers. Because I think part of their presentation, they're supposed to say something about the farm workers and their rights. And the other thing I want to find out what the thing is the last Agriculture of Africa section 25 jobs and equitable, especially for compensation, if they can unpack the first. If they can unpack the first. And then the other important thing is the most of the time they talk about the land. But there's nothing that has been the level or cut or actually make us understand about the property that fall under those that they are talking about. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Sultan, thank you, sir, to welcome the delegation. Some of the factors that you slightly referred to, as a jury guard should be driven to the owner's crisis. And they speak to a concern that was expressed by Eskom yesterday, that there are some farmers who will hardly allow people on their farms. What extent would you, as out of South Africa, help Eskom to have access? Because in some cases they told us that negotiations have gone beyond that year, and the farmers are willing to give them access.
and so on, we want to know what, how you feel about that and what can you do with that. Secondly, what do you mean by time limit? That is to say, this, you want the payment to be made as soon as possible after appropriation. Can you suggest a period that you think would be reasonable? Welcome the notion that the market value should not be the only consideration. I would want to say that. Lastly, the difference between what is offered as compensation and the balance on the loan of the bond. Well, how would you suggest the government approaches a situation where it is the farmer himself or herself who calls herself to be behind with this bank? They've been defaulting for 12 months or something, and in fact, when compensation time comes, they're owing about 100,000 rand more than what they should be owing, and they start with their new payments. Thank you very much.
Considering the cost, of course, and the extent of court hearings. And
would it not then be better for the faith to be going to court rather than the expropriation of its own? That's my first question. And the second one deals with the Franekast. Ons bekommer daaroor, of ons graag in kommentaar van RSA, bestaan die moontlikheid dat die aanbied of die beskikbaarheid van kamergeld mense dan kan aanmoedig om onteiening aktief teen te staan en hulle aanmoedig om dan additioneel vergoed te word, en andere kamergeld hier met andere woorde weer aktief weerstand te bied teen die onteiningsproces met die doel om
het verhaal en helpen op ons. Het is wel een moeilijke dat ik weet op waar manier expert kan worden.
Vrij dank je, kerel Adbare. Zo ga ik naar die kerel Adbare, meneer Adas. Vrij dank je, voorzitter. Dank je. Ik heb zo wat aanbieden. Voorzitter, nu twee die eerste ding voor die alternatieve speaker is het zien. Mechanisme. Is agri is als zo'n mechanisme. En dan zien we van ons al een vreedschel. En dan zien we dit meer vreedschel. Dan zullen we dus een plan voegen om zo'n mechanisme een vreedschel. Om mediaties voor te kunnen doen. Want het is altijd belangrijk dat de mensen stilst vanzelf voor die hoofdstuk gaan. En het georganiseerde landbouw, waar alle die monsters is georganiseerd door georganiseerde landbouw, is het bij belangrijk dat zo'n mechanisme ontwikkelen. En dan voorzitter, die aangeven met de internationale ondervinding, dat expropriatie die altijd een land hervormen zal versplitten. Kan ik zeggen, het is die bedoeling in de wetgeving voor land en vorm of te bespoedigen. Ik denk dat als daar enige verwijstukken is of voorbeelden is, waar het een plaatspunt is, waar je eerst dat voor zo'n voorbeeld kan doen of kan dan verwijst. Wij dank u. Wij dank u,
meneer Happer. Ik toch hier een mooi voorbeeld om te horen wat Agri zegt, wat de leden gezegd hebben, de vraag kan beantwoorden.
Maar kun je dat een chef? Thank you very much. Mijn familie heeft hier ook zo Afrika zijn, zowel als voor mijn Afrikaanse speaking colleagues, dat ze de allow Afrika zijn voor de school in het Engels. But that's it. How close is it to my 11 different languages? How did you run it from? But I'm sure that the presenters will be kind enough to articulate in English, but I also free to answer the next in Africa. You should be able to talk. And where somebody is unable, there's a pedestrian translator who can try and translate some of the issues. Problem is that the person can hear. It's a problem. The first time, the moon is a then you can if you have a question about the frown of the sun. It's our first time to be able to. Ik kan dat nog
gaan. Oh, voorzitter, ik heb toch een doelpunt aan dat die Afrikaans gooit. Met al die van. The Honourable Groenewald wanted an explanation of what we were saying with respect to the market value and the bond holders. What we're really trying to do is to emphasize two things. The first is what's the possible economic goal and financial and investment consequences will be of an approach where generally we find substantially less than market value. That even though the Constitution allows it, can have really negative consequences both for the bondholders and the farmers. So that's the one point that we're trying to make. The other point that we're trying to make, and we're doing this because there was a bit of a divide in NEDLAC between ourselves and the bondholders around this, as to should there be a statutory preference in favour of the bondholders, or should the contractual agreement between the parties suffice? Because, as you rightly say, there is a contractual agreement that can probably, in any event, be enforced by the financial institution. But we don't see the necessity for a statutory intervention to give a preference. So that's why we say, actually, the way that it is worded, from our point of view, is balanced, because it gives that opportunity for the opportunity for the party to try and come to agreement, first of all, as to how, you know, the compensation should be divided. And then, if they cannot do so, then there is recourse to the court.
Honourable Sitor, you asked about the farm workers. Although the farm workers are a very important part of our industry, we don't represent the farm workers per se. But this bill does cater for unregistered rights. So in that sense, it's an improvement on the existing legislation, which does not cater for unregistered rights, which are typically often the kind of rights that farm workers would have on land that is expropriated. So my sense is that their rights are protected in the law.
Chair, I just wanted to add that in terms of the extension of security of the new Act that governs tenureable farm workers, that should be also considered in the expropriation process, because clearly if you look at the amount of farm workers affected in South Africa, you're probably looking at about 770,000 people in total. So a very important point that was raised.
Yeah, the other question that the Honourable Sitor put was around what do we mean by this, if I understand you correctly, this last sentence where you say that Section 10.3 states that compensation must be just and equitable in regard to all of the relevant circumstances. Often there is a focus only on those factors that are particularly mentioned in Section 25.3, which are things like the market value, the purpose of the expropriation, the expense, the state subsidy, etc. But the way that I read Section 25 is the aim really is to get to a just and equitable end result, and that it's not a closed list, it's an open-ended list, which means that there may be other factors that also come into play. And what he's pleading for is that all the relevant factors be taken into consideration, which is really what Section 25 in our interpretation provides for.
Then Honourable Bertoni, oh, and I think there was a question, why are we only talking about land? We realise that this bill is not just about land, it's about property, but from our perspective, land is critically important because that is what our members are very heavily invested in. Honourable Bertoni wanted to know about the owner's privacy, the fact that we're stressing that you regard it given to that. And specifically referred to the ESCOM presentation yesterday and you know, the difficulty that they sometimes have. We have a very good relationship with ESCOM at AgriSA, and we have a protocol for access to forms, which ESCOM amongst others, which we agreed with them amongst others, and that protocol allows, it spells out basically the rules and the procedures to get access. So what it says is that if the owner doesn't want to give access and that owner is a member of organized agriculture, then the next step should be for ESCOM or whoever wants to get access to approach the local farmers association so that they can try and intervene and get the member, you know, because it's a statutory right to grant the necessary access. So there is a procedure that we prescribe to where we try and assist. But what we need to recognise, however, is that not every farmer in this country is a member of AgriSA. But where we can assist in this regard, we do so. And then the Honourable Sitor also wants to know about whether we're proposing a specific time period. We haven't really given that any thought. It's just, for us, it's critical that payment not be delayed, and the bill does provide that 80% be paid on the date of expropriation, so that leaves 20% that must then be paid as soon as possible, and there is also provision for interest that accumulates during that period. So we're saying as soon as reasonably possible without specifically mentioning any time period. The situation of where somebody deliberately defaults on a bond, I'm not sure I understand that question correctly, but I think that contractually that's what normally be provided for. So I don't think it really comes into play in the expropriation. You know, that the outstanding amount that the banks would be contractually, would you like to... Thank you.
Okay.
How do
you
think
about it? Effectively, let's say a farmer has been loaned with $1 million at bond. Now, suppose you're servicing this bond at 100,000 rand a month, for argument's sake. And for something like 6 months, due to any set of circumstances, he defaults. So he's behind by 200,000 rand. Now, comes expropriation time. Would you say that the government must consider that 200,000 rand as recoverability as part of the value that must be paid out of the place or the farm to pay by himself?
I would be surprised if that kind of situation would arise, because I would think the banks would be foreclosed long before that. They probably wouldn't allow it to get out of hand for 6 months.
I just want to add to that, Chair, that with each other, we communicate these points of view that is very well researched and thought through throughout our membership in the provinces and also in District Hill. So from our communication campaigns, we see that it's very important to calm down and to kind of settle in the thinking around it, that gives you some comfort.
Then as far as honourable drivers, questions around the access to court and the prohibitive cost of litigation are concerned. Yes, that is a concern. The cost of litigation is a concern. If you look at the wording that we propose, the new clause 8.1, we are actually proposing that the state should take the matter to court rather than allowing the owner 60 days and then placing the owners on the owners to approach the court. However, the issue of cost is something that will always remain. There's a basic legal principle that says that the person that alleges something must prove a guidance with limited advice. So if you are alleging as the owner that the compensation that the state has offered is not sufficient, it's not just equitable, you have to prove your case. And in order to prove your case, you will have to incur costs to do so. We would very much like to see a situation in this country where there is some state assistance towards the legal costs also of landowners who are protecting their property rights. But at this point in time, if you approach the court, it's for your costs, whether you take the matter to court or whether the government takes it to court and you're a defendant in that matter. So I think the wording assists, but it doesn't completely take away the problem of the legal costs. I think where will best assist us is where in price provision for at least 80% of what is offered being paid by government. So at least you have access to that funds to then pay your legal expenses in the meantime. And of course if you win the case, then you should also get a court order in your favour, which will not necessarily repay all the costs that you have incurred, but a substantial profit that will come from the cost order. And then I might be wrong, but I don't think that Sulawesian will encourage people to hold out for more money. How it worked in the 75 Act is that it was a fixed amount, a percentage of the actual compensation. So I don't think, my opinion is that it won't encourage people to hold out for more money. In Mr. Evans, the alternative dispute mechanism, it's up for every SA to provide that mechanism. I'm sorry, Mr. Evans, I'm looking at Mr. Fulton. It's not for every SA to provide it, but we will certainly support it. It must be an independent institution, which is the people that are actually trained in mediation and that are professionals that should do the alternative dispute resolution, but we will support such a system from our side. And then the international experience, unfortunately I didn't bring the research along. I can make it available to the committee afterwards if you require me to do so.
Honourable Adams, and just to put you at ease, we've done a lot of research on these issues in India and Chile and all over the world. And like I said, we would be happy to provide you with information.
Honourable Chair, I would like us to be moving towards conclusion. We are now advancing into the time of the next presentation. We have dealt with the substantive issue, so I would appeal to members. If you want to raise other issues, please be succinct, brief, and to the point. Honourable
Mr. Chairman, thank you for allowing a second part of the chair, but it's going to follow up on the issue of compensation. I think that many people are concerned about that, especially when there are limited mortgages involved. And I want to ask again that would they not agree that the fact of that compensation should cover the entire mortgage loan and even go above that to ensure that expropriated owners are not left destitute because they are not only their home but also their business or their means of making a living, their livelihood, and they have to then find something else somewhere and they have to make an allowance for them. And then also yesterday, the Banking Association made a presentation and they alluded to the fact that the banks may be less amenable to providing loans to the agri sector and that if also, although it is very just comical.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I wanted more clarity on the first slide, on number 5. Conversations should never be decided on the state's ability to pay. What does it mean? And secondly, in the presentation, it's silent about what is going to be happening to the people who are holding and the sister's rights when the rent is going to be expropriated. How do you bring them on board so that they are not taken by the side? Thank you.
Thank you, Professor. Professor, ik zie tevreden bij antwoord van Afrikaanse Hani. Ik wil nog blijven kijken. Wat wil eigenlijk zeggen in termen van seizoen 18, is dat daar moet een ooreenkomst bereikt worden tussen die eigenaar en die verwanthouder wat die bank gewoonlijk is. Maar die feit van die zaak is dat als we hof toe gaan, is het de staat tussen die verwanthouder en die eigenaar. Die staat het niet eigenlijk iets daarmee te doen. Want we zeggen, maak geen statutaire boodschap wat het betreft. Of bedoelen hulle dan, dat het genees moet word met hulle voorstel in termen van de siele 8, wat bepaalt dat die staat eindelijk die rechtskoste moet dra, in termen van het beschiet wat mag ontstaan. Want ek kan nie sien dat daar rechtig een voorstel is om hierdie probleem op te los, en dat identificeer die probleem. Dat as jy eienaar is, jy kry een vergoeding wat minder as die marktwaarde is, of slag al is die marktwaarde, dat jy daar nie een verband kan aflossen, dat jy nog steeds dan spreek jy weer vir die stande bedrag. Dat ek dus onbillig, in termen van de eienaar. Laatste voorzitter, en ek denk jy, het verskil nie met my afbare collega daar aan die andere kant, hier weet jy beslissen doen, met grondwet Borma. Die president Zuma heeft reeds gesê, dat dit gaan oor die beginsel van vrijwillige klip of verkoper, wat die werk volgens sy sien, het verskil waar hy sterk af word, en daarom wil daar weg doen, wees om dit te bespreek. So om hier te sit, en te dink, wie weet het mis te doen met grondwet Borma, is totaal keer.
We came across a number of papers where we saw that farmers, once government begins negotiations to buy, they let everything go, including not caring for the land reserve money. Now, when an evaluation is being done to buy a farm, how would you like the plants on the land to be taken into account as part of the value or not, given that kind of very, very prevalent behavior? Thank you.
I know that the numbers put you in a very invidious position. Why do I say that? You have to respond to them, and I have mentioned time to them. But what I would like everyone to realize that it won't be possible to pose all the questions that you want to pose and get all the answers in the manner that you'd like to have the answers. That type of engagement can take us the next couple of months. So we have to deal with the substantive issue, highlight and flag them, so that there is some understanding. I think there needs to be appreciation for that. I can't expect to walk away from this meeting and say that all my questions were answered to the extent to which I wanted them to be answered. So let's be reasonable. Present the rule to you, you do your best. Thank you.
We on, in your hands, we're also prepared to respond in writing if that would assist you. Or we can try to be very brief.
What I would like you to do is to give you the opportunity to be as succinct but as brief as possible. And then you can also provide us with fuller answers that you can distribute to everyone through the committee track. Thank you very much.
Okay, then first, to Mrs. Blair, I think, ideally, of course, you know, she's right. We would like that kind of situation where you have full compensation for the bondholder and compensation for the owner. Whether that's feasible or not, is another question, but I think, you know, that would be our preference if that were possible. Then, as far as the state's ability to pay is concerned, We don't think that compensation should be subject to that. If the state decides to expropriate, it should budget accordingly. And the individual should not be the person who carries the expense at the end of the day. If the state doesn't have sufficient funding to pay for what it's expropriating. The only surprise, I think the department is probably in a better position to respond, but the bill fully caters for the rights of farm workers and compensation also for the unregistered rights. And then Honourable Krubolt, the question, yeah, it's a difficult one, and we don't have the final solution as far as that is concerned. I think we want to see the best possible protection for the interests of our members in this whole situation without compromising the financial system, because what Honourable Bayer said is true. You know, it may well lead to higher interest rates and all of that, which is not good for the sector, which is not good for our members either. So we need to try and strike a balance there. And just on the restitution, it's a complex issue, restitution, because often the reason why the owners stop investing in the land is because of the uncertainty of the claim, and because sometimes the financial institutions and the agri businesses don't want to finance them any longer because there's a claim on the land, and that has an impact. Certain crops which we cannot just take out like beans, which will should be bought, should be included in the compensation. Obviously, if it's something that you can harvest, like grain or whatever, and you allow the harvesting, then you need to take that into account.
Yes, just in final conclusion, I think it's important to consider the common law principles and the principle of the commercial sector in this regard. So, 150 billion rand's worth of finances with the commercial banks in this sector. And that's the main driver for the credit and access to the credit markets. And we also just need to take that into consideration because that's an important mechanism for the agriculture sector.
I think if there any input from the department, share some light where you
are standing. Yes, thank you very much, but thank you for the opportunity. First of all, to really appreciate the contribution that the agreement is making. I think this is real democracy. I think you're committed to make sure that we have an expropriation act that the Constitution compliant, and we are too. So we can only get that right in engagement of this kind. So you could do this as well, that my officials particularly playing the process and the class of the competence. So thank you, Sam. That doesn't mean that we agree on everything. So in terms of the market value issue, that one constitutional court judgment to which you referred, the Lynch, not the only consideration, but the Lynch, other constitutional court judgments have said clearly that it doesn't necessarily have to be there. So we open-minded about that matter. In other words, if it would have been the case, that there might be a process around the initial valuation of property, where they exist and not intended. That can be a convenient starting point to a low which you can go or above which you can go. But it doesn't have to be the case. So just the fact that your reference to the FAO file thing, which is interesting, and which really tries to base compensation essentially on equivalence, I think that and related that to the object of land reform would be development and not for a translate, it goes for the equivalence principle. Maybe we're dealing with a slightly different set of equivalence is one factor, but we're dealing with equitable access to natural resources as mandated by the Constitution and the like. And equitable access in a highly equal society. So we're dealing with a transformational obligation and not just an equivalence. I completely agree with you that there's no reason why 100% of compensation shouldn't be paid where it's clear that the rest of the have been paid. But we allow for 80% because life is better than 80%. So that's the message I'm giving.
I'm not sure if maybe was present yesterday at the point when we indicated that we would certainly consider seriously an automatic referral to the court in the case of compensation disagreements and to be effectively shared. I think a strong case was made in this week's report that the poor community of the party that we did would have a great deal of difficulty in accessing calls, providing lawyers, and so forth. You're right. I'm concerned that we don't care enough. But clearly, an appropriate should be challenged not just on the compensation matter, but also in terms of the Minister of Justice. And so that is further, as you said, to other than legislation.
Thank you.
finally closed the door. As soon as you are ready, you may commence with your presentation.
Thank you, my name is Peter Meekham. I see your bad Martin.
I'd like to assure you that the initials are bad, but I hope I'm a good man.
Thank you for your answer, I reassure you.
Jefferson, I can say you are a good man, don't worry.
Look, I'm a registered bad guy. Not a good one in my past, because I applied to become the fellow general here in South Africa, and that application was not taken up. So, whatever I say is partly getting to saying too many things here today, but I would like to, I do think I've got a certain way of looking at some of these.
So, I'm going to say this is a point of order. I don't want to be rude, but it's a documentation on the submission of mine. Which one is it? Because I don't see it. I do understand the English, don't worry.
Could you please help Mr. Plunderbalk with a copy of the presentation? Well, in the meantime, you can have mine there. And Mr. Madame Gowal to this one. Mr. Meekham, could you kindly also just lift your mic a bit to make you more audible? Thank you.
Yes, my colleague said that that's probably why I was so down, was that my CV is beyond itself, I think. So I'm also very pleased to see how many people on both sides of of this debate don't want on expropriation. And I think I can provide you with a way in which this can be avoided. The big elephant in the room about land prices is that wherever you look in the world, you don't find that the creator was the willing seller. You can go across there to the heat office, and you can find the oldest title deed in South Africa. It was issued by the Governor Craddock, an English bureaucrat. The creator was not there. His signature is not there. Those of us who own our land are sitting here with immense assets at our disposal. I mean, I have a small plot in Plymouth. I couldn't add a square meter to that if I had a trillion rand. Even a trillion. This land is something so special, so amazingly rich and fecund. But we've got people without it on the continent worrying about the price. Now, one thing about Governor Craddock was that, and he was in a difficult position because he's come here and he's got to occupy, subdue South Africa. But he didn't have any people to come. So he struck upon a really good idea, and he said to the people in England mainly, he said, look, come here and you can have land under what he called a perpetual pickering tenure. That perpetual pickering tenure was caused many hundreds of thousands of people to come to South Africa. That's what he decided to do. And what it meant was that there was no capital value entry cost plan. You were given a type of key, perpetual term, and all you had to do was to pay what he called a 1996. But we're in a situation where a strange situation. What did you hear? And by the way, I have a project here, which is worth $4.5 million. That's just the land. I paid $225,000 for it, but I know the stock I was born, I think it must have been. But I haven't raised, there's not one thing I've done to deserve that increase in value. Not one. I haven't raised a finger. I was asked. But the value of that land has come about because of Snake, because of Misha, because of the sun, because of the soil, because of the views, because of the infrastructure and the services of the of government. Somebody's given me this. That drops, and it's a state. But I thought it certainly wasn't any of my friends. But this is the situation around the country where anybody owns land. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people who don't own land, and therefore they can't get on the what they call the property ladder. But there is a way of changing the situation by getting back to the perpetual container state so that the 750 billion rands worth of income tax and VAT, which is collected each year, out of our work and our wealth, can you imagine this? We work and we make wealth out of this and that, and we pay some of it to the state. We're at it. We could simply be paying the same amount in land value. 750 billion rand is waiting to be collected from the land. And if that means that we need to be compensated because I would lose myself my 4.5 million, then the compensation is the rest of my work in my life is tax-free. There's no BMYs, there's no corporate tax, there's no capital gains tax. That's the compensation. Nationalize the land rents, not the land. Nationalize the land rents, and not the land. But prioritize the people's work and their wealth. So, if I need concerns to lift this, I think I'm going to be quite technical to begin with, just to say that land rent is what owners should pay monthly to the state to prevent others from using their land. It is independent of land owners' work or savings. It relies only on nature's bounty as well as certain state governments, government services and infrastructure. More rents in British Corp. Land taxes are a user charge. The rates and taxes surcharge on land only. It's about 10 times. Whatever you're paying now, rates and taxes, you ought to pay 10 times. But you won't have to pay any income tax at all.
Yeah. The more you work, the more income tax you they charge. When you're doing this, when you get through the system, the value of your land doesn't change by 50 euro, and no matter how long, if you work 24 hours a day, you won't pay any more tax. And this is the same, by the way, with the determined. Land rents can be determined by auction. There's a spot prices. It's like all other natural resources, minerals, or precious metals, spectrum, fishing, hunting, and these are natural, these are gods. We can't own them. We can use them. Right. Just to be clear about matters, there's a PE ratio definition which I'm just going to remember on. And that is that if the rent on your land is 100,000 rand, you will pay 1,670,000 rand for that. It's a sort of 16 times. Anyway. mental prison, the outer brain, binding, law of land prices is that land prices equals land rents minus land taxes times that price ratio. So, when land taxes equal land rents, that's land at the selling price. But when land rents are higher than land taxes, the land price is the difference, multiplied by the fee. Now, just to give you a few examples of what's been happening in South Africa recently, in this milieu, the most alarming one that I could see was Tonga Fuel Limited in Natal, in their recent balance sheet, announced that they had 8,000 hectares, of developable land, I suppose it was sugarcane at one time. It is now at the value of 62 billion rand. The PE ratio of 16.17, it means that the annual rent they should be paying today on that land, which is vacant now, is cheaper than a year. But they're paying up to this rate of time. The annual rent per hectare is nearly 500,000 per hectare. Valhalla, the game farm in this is 13,000 hectares, land value of nearly a billion, and showing a rent they should be paying at 4,195 rand. That's what it would be. Then there's my house in Germany, which is worth all the land is worth. What the land under the house is worth, 35 million. I'm grateful for that. And then there's a Southfield, Daniel Holland Kinlaw. There's a Southfield plot. The average residential stand in South Africa is not worth 620,000 rand. That is, guess how many times that is more than it was in 1994 when we had any idea? 620,000 what is up? It's 17 times higher than it was in 1994. Well, we can't go on like this. I mean, if we continue to go on like this, that same stuff you got in another 21 years will be worth 10 million rand. And the CPI would make it just cheaper. So, there's something. We've got to do something about it. I don't see you can really progress without doing something really quite radical about the land prices. And fortunately, the Constitution is right behind what we're saying now, right behind what was just. The state must take reasonable, legislative, and other measures within its available resources to foster conditions which enable citizens to gain access to land on an equitable basis. And they must do it quickly. Okay, so one of the side effects of this is hard work, just recognizing that land will become affordable. The other, there are some other side effects. The rights to the other human rights, the other rights become fully realizable. Rights of dignity, life, freedom, freedom of trade, occupation, profession, housing, health. All of those are, you can link them back to the land. Keep your hands on that, the compromise of those rights. And a beautiful thing also about that section 25, to my mind, is that it ends forever the centuries-old proletarian landless condition of the tenants, because everybody can afford that. And therefore they have to be unavoided wage. Another beneficial side effect is that that their land prices are restrained compared to ours, and yet their GDPs are at least five times, GDP per head, are at least five times what ours are. Now, what I've been saying is not something new. And in fact, Robert Spiller says this about how one should deal with land. The user of land should not be allowed to acquire rights of indefinite duration for same things. because we only pay for 17 years of action. For efficiency, adequate revenue, and for justice, every user of land should be required to make an annual payment to governments equal to the current rental value of the land as he or she rents those from using. Now, I realize that a lot of this is you'll have to get Treasury approval to change the tax system, and I see that it's not easy to do it for 21 years. But you have a record in the compensation which this new bill brings out. But you will have to make these changes to Section 12.1, which, in summary, means that if the new people, you will compensate people for that. It's not that value. The land they've got entitled to, they haven't. That $4,500,000, this is not money. The specific clause is that the current use of the determination must take into account the current use of the property, and if it owns a distinct and it is unused land, no compensation due. But nothing in the zoning scheme says you can leave land unused. Is that it? If you can show me that, I'd be very happy to put it in there. I can't find it. It says actually that you must use land for various purposes. Residential, commercial, agricultural, shopping, farming. There's nothing which is going to be unused. So, you're not. So, what would happen if you started to raise high rates on land, that 27 million hectares of unused arable land out there would become affordable to everybody. So that's the end of my story. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much for your input, sir. Members, an opportunity for seeking clarity, posing questions, and making comments.
So let me read the questions that comes up with.
I'm going to suggest that at least you take three questions and you respond to them, and then have a three.
Yeah.
If we are so many takers. Mr. Kunovar, Honorable.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought you had three questions because I think I was part of three questions. But firstly, I want to say quite an interesting submission, a bit extraordinary, but we welcome different views on land. I just want to make, well, firstly, I want to ask Mr. Meekin, this concept of yours, where in the world is that applicable?
Hong Kong.
Say again?
Hong Kong.
Okay, sorry?
No problem. No. It's a problem for me. It's not a problem for me.
Okay, thank you.
I don't want you to have it now. I'd like to be in the holiday. Please continue with your questions.
If I can get examples in the world, I've got one already. Then I also want to say, if I understand it correctly, and I use my site number, page 6, the sales view plot, the average residential standard in South Africa. If I understand it correctly, it says the annual rent per hectare will be 371,936. Now, with that, form. It's as simple as that. I want to know that, but maybe I misunderstand it. And then the last question, Mr. Chairperson, it says that this Celsius plot has multiplied by 17 since 1994. What is the world average? worldwide, is there an average of what is multiplied? We should just get a perspective. Because it's up to 17 times. Maybe the world average is 20 times. So we actually go on. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Yeah, this is a very, very interesting idea. And first question. What, in your opinion, is the reason, or the most prominent reason, for the escalation of land prices, especially unused land? Finally, on the conclusion four, do I understand you to believe that a government should compensate people for land even if they're actually paying, for its maintenance and so on, for a period of time?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just wanted to check with the presenter as far as the statistic of the petrol consumption. Does it mean that the rent that we pay to only because it's to the statistic that we're talking about here? And if that is the case, when did you obtain this land?
Matthew, could you kindly repeat your question?
I think he talked about the question of process China, where people would like to come and get in. Then I wanted to know as to whether you obtained in that question, and if that is the case, when was it? When did you obtain that
question? As soon as you are ready, you may reflect.
Hong Kong, the prime example is the fact that Hong Kong individuals cannot own land at all. Entire Hong Kong is owned by the state. That doesn't mean that they don't have some income taxes, but they have very little income taxes. They have fewer taxes than our government puts into our specialized industrial and economic zone. And the reason is just that simple, because the more you tax my work and my wealth, and the less, therefore, you tax my land's going to go up in accordance with the formula that I presented. So the one electric price in Southfield, I've used that bus column in there because I wanted to show per hectare what the various values were. And that's from actual bills. You can see that right from as for the world cycles, I haven't been able to define anything in the world in which it comes anywhere near the 17 times it's happened in South Africa. But you can go to the graph that I've shown there, it's in the files, and they've got about 40 countries you can put in the graph. That's the graph that I've put in comes from there. And you will see that if you keep South Africa in and put in all the other ones, it will be quicker. They're very much higher than they are. Answer satisfy you about why the prices go up. Sir.
prices go up. I was just asking you if my explanation that if you don't tax the land, the unburned land rents, but you do tax the earned work and wealth of the people, then that allows the P/E ratio to ratchet it. 100,000 rand, which you didn't tax, because my land becomes 1.7 million. Now your second question is, I think would there be no compensation due if you haven't if you have maintained the land? Yes, this competition is due to the land, but this is to do with unused land. At this moment in time, because until you take the tax system, you can't really do that. And when was official quick claim tenure? That was in 1812. The first paper deed was in 1812, when England was being besieged by the Industrial Revolution. People were losing their jobs, they were in treasure acts, they were hungry, they had to do something to make to escape. That's really what they, and this is what the government did. He said, come here, I'll give you a farm, and you'll pay for it what anybody else would be willing to pay for.
Thank you, sir. The next honorable members to pose questions, Honorable Maseka, followed by Honorable Shami.
Thank you, Chair President. Thank you, General Lindsay. On this page, you mentioned that the fishing and hunting that was just given, I don't know, you don't understand what it is, but it is as and you mentioned also that land bank is independent. Does it mean that for compensation, the person that sells his property is not individual? Or maybe you are charging less of your big land bank. I don't know, I don't understand. What you said, the land bank is independent.
Where
did I see that? It's the page 3 of your presentation. Okay, no, thank you. And the last one, you said the exploration rate has increased by 20% for 1994.
Thank you. Honorable Mateva, I think you were referring to page 2, the first paragraph, or the second paragraph. But it's okay. Honorable
Mateva. Thank you, Chair. Let me start from
because very few people are honest about the issue of land. That should not buy the land. So if there is a formula, why should we comment? We need to comment for that. Because most people, when we talk to the issue of land, they know for a fact that this land was supposed to take care and give it to them, but today they don't want to accept that. But from your side, you are saying you got this land and now it's 1 million, and then why should we comment? The issue is on Mawad, the same land rights, what owners should pay money to the case to prevent others from using the land. Because the reason for the expropriation bill is that the land must be made available for public use, so that it can be able to be used by the state for agricultural development and other programs. But now,
Now, can it be because with this chain arrange to prevent others to use it? Is it, are we still not looking for the same problem that you have here, that you've got owner of land, but a lot of money from that are not even staying in this country, but they're just keeping them there, not functioning because they've got money they can afford to put up. Because you see, all the same thing with that. I can keep up with money, I can find out them and make sure that they prevent it from using it, of which the first reason for expropriation of them so that it can be used, not that expropriation so that the government can keep it. The same, it must be expropriated so that it can be used, especially in terms of growing the agricultural economy and provide food security in the country. So I need clarity on that issue, that you can pay rent as much as you want, just with any intention to prevent the state or any other individual.
You may respond, Mr. Nikon, to the two or three questions posed. During that period. And there was
really bother. What are you used to that? You still be in charge at the same time. What they're currently in, that's a diversion.
That you
that you know earlier. It's got to be paid back. You know, they use something to use it, but pay back the money. And in this situation, what you do is you say, right, you pay back the money, but you can do it over 30 years. Okay? So 30 divided by 4.5 million. Is what, 150,000 rand a year or something. But the less that you do that, all land in the country becomes affordable. Because there's no gain in owning unused land. Every month you've got to pay for what? For what? People don't do that. People like you to do that. And that's, I hope that tells us all. No, sir, it's terrible. I don't think I ever said that it's a private problem, but that we will lose our land. If I did, I'd mislead you. All I'm saying is that our title leaks. It remains intact, and that there is no change to the title deeds. But my land, my rates and taxes go up. The bits of value that I have, which are being handed to me each month by the state through infrastructure, through services, through governance, those values, I have no claim, I have no moral claim on those values. They're not mine, I didn't make them. The country did it. And so, my property remains mine. My property is mine. But the rents are deeded to the state, and they see my income taxes and that tax. It's a tax haven. And tax havens are job havens and growth havens. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it answers what many other questions are going to
be. Mr. Lincoln, I would like to thank you, but before that, Deputy Minister, you're very gracious and good.
Thank you, and thank you to the meeting. I think one of the legislation that we're dealing with, the most useful points that were made by this meeting from our point of view is to underline to us that market value and the compensation issue. That the Constitution has got a right to actually write to say that market value is not the sole factor that should be taken into account when determining compensation. Let me make a very clear remark. First of all, the 70% increase, 70 times increase, is really the fault. There are also areas in which land value is deep, market value of land is deep. So it's a, those increases are skewed by the huge increase in value of Sandton, Clifton, and so forth. As a result, among other things, the state intervention we're talking about Sandton, the Caltrain, the impact of things like that. I thought that the EFF colleague was a bit too quick to congratulate you. I mean, had our good friend 1812 thing was not virgin territory that we think was so on census, 1820 census, but it was just a less land, okay? And although you didn't say that you paid your house, did pay your house, you that you paid far less than current market value. But anyway, I thought there was a wrong to congratulate you.
Oh, but your comment to say you didn't pay for it.
Okay. But anyway, that's what it's about.
Yes. Honorable Alexander, please don't do that. I would not encourage dialogue. I'm about to announce tea so you can continue to discussing with the Deputy Minister. But let's respect the proceedings. Each and every one will get an opportunity to talk.
No, this is fine. I know. That's what they do. 15 minutes after. That's just what I was saying.
Fine. No, of course, correct. No, of course.
Let me go and check it in. I appreciate what you are doing. But children, it can be very difficult to respect, to continue respecting the ruling if you isolate me, you did not isolate me, but from the pandemic. Because you stopped the proceedings, separated me and addressed me. But there was a guy when I just entered you, the ruling about the ruling, and he remembers me saying, no, there's a chairman that you did not stop to address Mr. Bruno.
about, they don't do that. So I am just asking my recurrent responsibility to ask your person to consistent. I mean,
wonderful
news. Is that great? I'm just
asking. No. Wonderful news. From your workplace duties, you have just entered the room. You do not know what preceded your entry. Mr. Hunavar, I spoke to, not to engage in conversation with the commander. That point has been made. My responsibility as the chair, I know that responsibility very well. I will protect each and every member to be able to have their say. Mr. Hunavar, please. Don't respond to your honorable issue. You can do it as you intend. Deputy Minister, could you kindly
really thank you for
may I just say that
I think we really need to debate whether the decisions that we've made in the very last month to practices should be more involved when it comes to compensation. Whether it should include them, I would be disinclined to do that, but I would urge us to the court or the spread authority to take these matters into account. In other words, unused land. I think it's implied by the current use of the land, the issue of windfall profits, which I think is implied by the constitutional requirement to look at direct state investments and other things, which are itself investments in windfall profits and so on. So in short, what I'm saying is that for me, the takeaway, the value takeaway from Mr. Mason, is that market value is just one indicator of what should be taken into account.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. Mr. Meekan, I would like to thank you on behalf of the committee for the input that you made. I would like to suggest that we have a 15-minute Q&A class. So we'll comment with 45. Honorable President, if you can close the door. Those who are having conversations, you advise to continue the outside.
Difficulty with the previous Act, so that we are not sure which of the copies that we use for this presentation.
We have. Oh, you can just listen, sir.
No.
I'm just going to make three points.
No. But it's important that all the members have the relevant presentation so that they can follow your input and be able to engage with it. Because we've given comments. Yeah, just for the thing, I have to make sure that everyone has the right of the presentation.
That's right. It's a document if I have comments on it.
Is the South African Property Owners Association.
Yes.
Now the acronym is SAPOA. It's because your document hasn't got it for a head.
Yeah, unfortunately the company here singing the praises of SAPOA is not good. Can I say that SAPOA wish to congratulate the departments for the bill as it stands and to work in workable and practical documents. We say so from a technocratical point of view. I'm not going to try and find any philosophies around here, as previously said. To me, this expropriation is a manner in which, in law, ownership or rights pass from a person to the state or a third party. And it's no more than that. There's no ideology going with it. The document which you see here is to be used in order to affect exactly that. It's a colorless concept. Now, there are, the document's gone through many persons, but there are still a few footnotes. The point which is not mentioned here, which I want to turn briefly to, is the question of the date on which the term compensation must be determined. Section 12 of Act 63.5 said that you're entitled to compensation to be done as at the date of notice, which defines the date on which the notice was ordinary to serve. And there is no such date in this act or this bill of should be there. I suggest that section 12 be amended to include the notion that compensation must be determined as at the date of compensation. The date of compensation is indeed defined in section 1. But I really have it against the definition of the word courts in section 1. You see, the notion in section 1 is that if you read together with the later sections, that the compensation is going to be determined by a high court, a magistrate's court having competent jurisdiction within whose area of jurisdiction property is situated, or in the case of intangible property, a court within whose area of jurisdiction and other property or maybe reasons. Now, I have nothing against C. The difficulty comes in, firstly, with A, where the jurisdictional area of the court or the jurisdictional court is not determined. As it stands there, with all national expropriations from minister is domiciled in Pretoria, which means that if the Minister of Public Works, for example, expropriated property, say, in Garok, then he sued in Pretoria. Now, in all the years, in all the many cases I've been in, there's always been a court inspection of the expropriated land and the comparable sales and other comparable evidence which is necessary to establish market value and compensation. Now imagine in that instance the whole court with all the advocates and attorneys and witnesses who have got to be there, the values, all of them have got to be contacted from the court in Pretoria to Cardo just to have a look has various properties, and it is essential. It must be done in this kind of meditation. Therefore, I suggest, please let us keep it the same way it was in Act 63 of 1975, where the court in whose area of jurisdiction the property is situated has jurisdiction to hear the question of determination of compensation. Then, as far as B is concerned, the magistrate courts, please let us not repeat the difficulty we had in the 1975 Act, the original version, which in sections 14 to 16 provided for a compensation court in respect of cases where compensation claim to offer is less than $100. Right. The minister could then appoint, the court is constituted in the Expropriation Act, and the minister then appointed a president or presidents. This was done ad hoc. I've appeared before these compensation courts. For example, in Kulu, there was some. Now, the determination of compensation is a specialized field. You cannot simply cut someone somewhere and say, you're the president, now you're going to determine the compensation. This may be a magistrate who's been busy with criminal law through his life. And usually that would be a very experienced man, but with no experience in what he's doing. It was such chaos that in 1992, sections 14 to 16 was deleted from the Act. And all determination of compensation was left to the Supreme Court, now the High Court. Therefore, it may sound laudable that you say, let's go to the magistrate court, it's just around the corner. But let me tell you, firstly, magistrate courts usually are for 90% here only criminal cases. Then you've got a special magistrate working with civil cases, and none of them have any experience in even trying to determine compensation. Because you might realize, in these instances, the court is not down to the pleadings. The court can award more than what is claimed, has happened more than once, or less than what was offered. And the court is largely at large on these determination of compensation. And therefore, please let us not saddle the magistrate courts with specialized work in which they've got no experience and have no hope at all to gain any experience. Then, as far as purpose of compensation is concerned, clause 15.3. You see, section 10.5 of the previous Act had a provision that when the statutory negotiation which goes on between the expropriator and the expropriatee with offers and claims, this must be brought to an end at some stage. And then there could be issued by the expropriator and litigants that if you do not, within 8 months, issue summons, then you will be deemed to have accepted the compensation. We must realize that is something which is potentially unconstitutional in terms of Section 34 of the Act, unless it is coupled with the necessary precautions. Now, in this instance, this notice may be issued within 120 days of the expropriation. Remember, you expropriate within 20 days, and those are just weekdays, within 20 days, there must be a claim. Within another 20 days, the state offers compensation. And then theoretically, right then, when they last off, they give this notice of 60 days. That leaves me 100 days from expropriation. This may work in a very, 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 very simple case. But you know, if
For example, a business is experimented, and the books have got to be analyzed. And as is usual, these businesses are perhaps a year behind in the books. And then the auditors must first come and update this stuff. And then you must get in specialized auditors, not usual auditors, who must value the goodwill of the company. And so it goes on. In my experience, from many, many cases, also from the state in the expropriation of the fish farms up in the Perra Dam, which is called, it is impossible in practice, even to submit a claim within 20 days after expropriation, the period you've got here. That is a month. The technical work which is not to be done is such that you are creating a nightmare for the people practicing in this area. Remember, there are a few specialized advocates, there are a few specialized attorney firms, and there are a few specialized auditor firms working with this kind of thing. And it's not as though this is going to be the only case on the menu. In Gautrain, for example, I acted for the Gautrain, and they expropriated not, I think I put in there 1,200 or something. They actually expropriated 1,174 properties. We were reserved acts for them. We went through them, through these procedures, and we were constantly busy. And now the people who are expropriated got to submit a claim within 20 days. All of them will be rushing to the same attorneys and the same advocates, and they will say, let's look at Section 35 here. Well, we can perhaps get some extension of time. But, you know, if you don't get an extension of time, there isn't even a chance of going to court and have it extended within a reasonable time before that time expires. 20 days is too short. First, before the claim to be submitted, it's 60 days previous. Well, as those 60 days I must say, but also not only the good days. So it's the same as this, except that there was a provision which says, if you question, the expropriator must give another 60 days. And this is what you must hear. And as far as the 8 months period is concerned, I suggest here, 6 months would perhaps be better than the 6 days you've put in for the deemed expropriation. But please let us make it longer and leave it to a court to give an extension if necessary. Otherwise we're going to run into constitutional difficulties. Because just putting in 60 days, you don't take into account the various difficulties which expropriatees may have as far as their own circumstances. It is an objective 60 days, and they must be very extended that for even a year or two as far as the difficulties of that specific expropriation is concerned, and the court must be able to do that. There's no ground into unconstitutionality for being so hasty, by so hasty. That coupled with a new provision to say compensation must be determined as at the date of expropriation, it means that that date is fixed. And even though the economy may change in the meantime, price may go up or may go down, you need to add at that date. And then this process is not necessary to rush the process in the end. And then as far as and the question of arbitration is concerned, and that you find as from place 6. The previous Expropriation Act had a provision that the parties may agree amongst themselves to submit their disputes for determination of compensation to
and arbitration. Where I practice, the state often does that. Because of the fact that you sit with an 18 months rope, waiting, 18 months waiting period in the high courts. The case is ready to be heard, you apply for a hearing date. This court lets you wait 18 months before you meet the date. The other, the court, division of the court may be 13 months or whatever. But you wait, wait, wait. We have various arbitration centers all over the country, which are equipped we have various arbitration centers, and arbitrators are on lists everywhere. There are judges who retire, there are senior counsel who know their story, there are junior counsel who know their story. Please, this is a very quick way of determining the compensation. We've done it in the hard rain often. Otherwise, you know, if you expropriate 1,100 properties, you'll wait until very long in order to determine the compensation. There's nothing wrong with it. In the circumstances, manpower can be much more efficient. And it is more expensive, yes, because you pay for your court. But it's a big choice. If someone has a claim for 100 million bucks, he doesn't mind paying 2,000 rand a day for the center. Let him decide on it. It will help us immensely in disposing of all these cases. And another wording in 5.4, I think the word absence of agreement there, that clause is meant to say absence of agreement on compensation. I do not share the difficulties which I've heard about that the validity of the expropriation, etc., etc., would now not go to court because of the wording of this. It's nonsense. This provision makes it quite clear that it is around the determination of compensation. I'm just sorry that the special rules of Section 14 of the previous Act is not in there. Because compensation cases are not run on the same basis as other cases. And it is very good to have the special powers which the judge has got in terms of the present Section 46, for example. But you can call in the parties and determine how far the integration has gone, tell them to do this, X, Y, and Z. I don't know what to say. I just want to say something about the question of market value, as the Deputy Minister's remark about the market value point. You know, once you start a Section 25 of the Constitution, there are judges saying, but remember, you can't get your full compensation
because there is a fence to be stuck between the focus on one hand and on the other hand.
But there seems to be an interlude of quietness.
Yes.
Shall we give it this, please continue.
Yes, but somebody is quiet. I think that section 25.3 is a wonderfully flexible interlude. You've got to strike a balance between the interest of the authority and let's call it the interest of the listeners. That balance has been struck before. Fighting is like saying you can't get your full loss when you die, consequential loss, etc. But in order to compensate someone, you've got to compensate him for what he lost. Otherwise compensation means nonsense. And in this element, you must first determine what the expropriator lost. What did he lose? It was his property. It's got a certain market value. Then comes the financial thing for the first thing. And one of your predecessors, I think, was Mr. Latoy. We were in conference on the Substance Act, and he said, oh, it's nonsense to think that the court starts with market value. And he said, you must start with public interest. I said, now, how do you quantify public interest? I'm just a hard-nosed practical lawyer. Yes. And three, let me give you an example. Minister, you use your own private house, and you stay in your own private house. You haven't got an official house. Now the roof goes in. State comes and put on a new roof. Now you've appropriated it. What will you claim? No, it's going to the value of the house. I said to my master, well, isn't that point of departure? What if you lose? That's what you claim. But do you know what? Section 353D would say, the state's not going to pay twice for that roof. And therefore, deducted from the market value of your roof, of your house, is going to be the cost you just take out on the roof. That is the way in which we apply Section 35. It is not some nebulous concept. You cannot determine compensation arbitrarily. And I do not share the fear of all these people I've heard about the outstanding bonds not getting paid, etc. We've applied Section 353 since 1996. I know of only one case where less than market value was spent. And that was exceptional. So, I think the whole debate and going around some political notion which I don't share, if Section 35.3 is applied on the basis I'm going to pay you this in public all the time, I don't need to be caught. Because that's not what Section 35.3 says. So, a last thing I wanted to point out, the cost formula, which we find in Section 26. That cost formula which you see there has got a long history. Because courts do not know who the winning party is.
in the determination of compensation. Let's take the following example. You claim 2 million. I offer 1 million. The court awards 1.2 million. Who wins the case? Is it the defendant? Because he got more than he would offer. Or is it the expropriator? Because 2 million was claimed and only of the difference 200,000 to the expert. So who wins the case? That formula is devised on a very specific philosophy, and that philosophy is the following. Firstly, we want to make sure that the parties go sit and think about their case at least 1 month before the case. Many, many cases are settled at that stage. Because the formula works this way. If the award is the same or less than offer, you as claimant pay it. If it is the same or more than a claim, the state pays it. But even in that little formula, symbolic, halfway between, if the award is halfway between the claim and the offer, the expropriator gets his full costs. From the point where the offer is the determination is the same, or just a lot more than what the state offered, he gets a sliding scale, which becomes 100% measuring in between. And therefore the state is at a distinct advantage in litigation. You've got to make sure that your last offer 1 month before is such that you don't land midway between the claim and the offer, because then you pay everything. And it is a good instrument as far as settlement of these cases are concerned. Let's not take it up. I think a lot of people want it up because they don't understand what's going on there. They don't know enough about doing those sums. You can, if you work at a proportion, then the midway between the offer and the claim becomes 1 to 1, i.e. 100%. The court retains its discretion. Despite the form, the court could say, as it is formulated now, that there are circumstances which are such that I will not apply the formula. And it often happens in court cases where I were, where just the court said, no, I'm not going to apply under these circumstances the formula. So that's my story. If you want to ask me my further questions.
Honourable members, time for comments, questions, or ask for clarification. Honourable Matango, followed by Honourable Kurunavar, and Honourable...
Thank you, sir. So yesterday we had one, I can't remember the presentation, but we were talking about using the land in court. And I'm not sure if the representative is talking about we have very limited expertise when it comes to the main case, whether he's suggesting that maybe the land claim would be the proper rule to use to ensure that we speed up the process. But on the other hand, Jefferson, with regard to arbitration, I was wondering whether, because, you know, arbitration is something different again with people that can actually assist people in the rural area. Because for people that will totally not even know the price of this property or a product, and how do we assist those people so that they can also, without just being told about the price of the property so much, so that they can also be assisted even before the expropriation takes place. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. So, I just want to start to say that the submission starts in the first paragraph saying that the department is recommended for the bill as it stands. It is workable, practical, and constitutionally sound. And then if I look at the proposals, it's a bit of a contradiction because it can create a bit of practical problems. My question is that because the submission actually suggests that the aspects on
on to arbitration, or that is a more expensive process, how does Sakura see the burden on the costs? Who must pay that? Although we are asking for more expensive legal costs. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, for the presentation. I'm a member of the DSS in Paris.
We're
much more deeper interest in the question of historical injustice when it comes to, in particular, the land. We don't think that these people you represent, I rather read on the internet quickly, your organization represents land and property theft in commercial property since the 1960s. So you represent some of the people that were beneficiaries of the policy of the criminal government. Well, the first thing I want you to speak to, because we feel that there has to be a moral point of departure to the question of property in South Africa in relation to them. Majority of them people don't own them, but we call this country a home. So you are the perfect body to have a conversation, meaningful and genuine conversation around expropriation of criminally taken land without compensation. I know you represent in a wide interest of property owners of the 94 people who, I get that, but some of them, the ones of the 1960s, is not credible. They were taking land from the colonial and apartheid government, one, or they were buying land from criminal government. So I would check that in your view. What do you make of that? And you know, it does require, by the way, a constitutional amendment question that I'm talking about. It means you sit down with the British Minister and all of you acknowledge that historic moral question. All the people, you can find out, you are perfectly given the information of all the white families. That's what that ruling meant. And then you can say, that will be the first point of departure to do a historical redress. How much did the party sell in 1934? So the criminal government. And let's not think about this for the criminal government and that colonization which has been successful for the criminal government. Then you sit down with the minister and you say, look, hey, I acknowledge as the family of the criminal government. We got to say, we got to farm in particular, from the giving by straight or someone like that. There was a thing that up to the minister. So, when we're given land by trade dog, we just came from England, we were working for us in India, and trade dog gave us land. Or, we spent this much from buying this property from trade dog. And the formula, because we are insisting today to ask about the no other value outside the market value. And that's your insistence. I can agree today because it will be difficult to prove to you that the market value one of the most distorted regions, manipulated regions. But let's say that after 94, I don't want to have that conversation. On the basis of historical trend, why should you be dealing market value when the state expropriates for historical trend? We don't think it must come to the state. I understand the sitting government thinks differently. But we don't think there must ever be any compensation to take funds. And all properties that were taken and distributed even by a market that happened under apartheid supervision or colonial supervision. But you can hold that for a while, it might be difficult. The property owners that represent an association who benefited directly from an apartheid, the colonial government, for the property that they owned, why should they be compensated? Number one. Number two, if you you don't agree, why should they be compensated like a slave if they agree that colonization and apartheid was kind of inhumanity? Just a final question to speak to the morality of this. You know, as a progressive right for a Catholic that under after 1994, our point of departure is colonization was a key environment. The minister of Tenga, the deputy minister, they actually performed a lot of genocide here in the Eastern Cape and other parts of the country, in the Western Cape. Two, there were forceful removals in the 1960s when your association was formed. Lots of like government forceful removals, particularly in urban areas, to create white suburbs and so on and so forth. I mean, these are the things that our history, and you represent people who directly benefit, out of that. Why would you come to Parliament without acknowledging that history when you talk about communication? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the President. Chair, on 2.2 on the presentation, it is as follows that the determination of compensation is a highly significant matter, which in most instances falls outside the experience of the ministry. Ministry who were presiding over the compensation of court were simply not competent to do the determination of compensation. By giving ministry court substitutions to the mine compensation, the difficulties which led to the removal from the Constitution Act of the local opposition court have been created. This platform can be unpacked because actually I'm trying to understand during the presentation you say the definition of the competition is a specialized field, which means a specialized initiative. You even propose that if they can use the hired ministers for
education. Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Chancellor, did I see you raise your hand?
Okay. Oh, my son. Okay, that before. Chair, I just heard the representative actually talking about the magistrate court actually cannot do this with the high court. And again, I'm just wondering again, the high courts are so tied up with so many issues. It is also not going to be another delaying thing that is going to delay more than even required.
Thank you. Presented the opportunity for rejoin.
I did catch the name of the gentleman who had the speech behind him.
The Honourable Member's surname is
Ngozi. Mr. Ngozi. If I paid full market value for the property, whether in 1960 or 1975, whether in 1990 or not, and it is taken from me, then I lose market value for the property. If I got it for nothing, then it's going to be taken into account in terms of Section 35, which looks at the history of the acquisition of property. There are, for example, cases where so-called black spots were removed in the Northwest, and the land was then sold on very easy terms to farmers. And when that was the notorious or famous Putfontein cases, in those instances, the land board, which had to sit on it, came to various conclusions according to their ideological ways of thinking. Some members said that the value or the compensation should be minus X. Other
others said it should be a million. And so opinion was spread all over the show. Now, within closing, your concept of what conversation should be is indeed colored by your ideology. I am not a politician, nor are my members. I'm here to look at an act objective, at the Bow. And the Bow is a beautiful piece of work. Our Constitution is a beautiful piece of work. And our Constitution says that compensation should be paid. Therefore, I do not venture to enter into your ideas of land which have been permanently stolen, etc., etc. This is the reality with which I, as a practitioner, and the property practitioners of SOPOA, are actually working. Then, let me just go into the question of arbitration. I think there were two questions. I think the one was by Mr. Masango and the other is by Mr. Masango. The first question by Mr. Masango ended in a question, how are the people who don't know their value of their property going to be assisted? If they don't know the value of the property, they give a valuer who assists them with that kind of thing. And there are many valuers and advocates and lawyers who actually work without asking a fee to indigent people. The bar councils and all the various high courts have a specific mechanism whereby they work, as they say, in that program. And every advocate who belongs to that society has got to fill in the form every year to give statistics about the work they have done for free and gratis. And let me assure you, contrary to popular belief, a large percentage of legal assistance is done free and gratis, not even assisted by the state. So it is a technical matter. And so it is. And everyone needs assistance. When he's expropriated, he needs assistance. So then the question of, I think Mr. Grunewald said that, yes, now you're talking about arbitration is going to cost more. It's a question of choice. If you want your compensation to be done quickly and efficiently, then you can go on arbitration. It's going to cost you more, it's going to cost you more. And therefore, it will not be done in small cases. It will usually be done in big cases. That's my experience. I've gone through a lot of arbitrations on expropriation schemes where I act for the state. And arbitration, we usually agree to arbitration. Because you can also choose the expert who sits in front and listen to the case. And make sure that he is someone who knows his story, comes to evaluations, etc., etc. Even in our arbitration, we don't want to have someone sitting there who has pictures in his eyes when he's about cross examining someone. But it is an efficient instrument of choice. It should not be left out. As Section 26 is presently formulated, it would seem that it says a court must be a court determining compensation. And particularly if you look at the previous act, which specifically mentioned that the parties make an arbitration for determination of compensation, then us lawyers will even interpret the new section as excluding arbitration in view of the history of this act. It seems to have been a deliberate choice to give it up, and I say that is very, very, very unbiased to do. And when Agnew was asked about other alternative methods of solving the by mediation, etc., etc., I think it's a wonderful idea. And mediation is indeed incorporated in some statutes. I know, because I've mediated some of those.
and you meet with it.
Not a success, but a couple of things. As far as the preparation competition and even passes for execution matters concerned, I'm often asked by the commissioner, ladies of the commissioners, to please get the two sides of the experiment of the valuers together. And let me tell you, not one instance where they don't agree when they get to have that office of mine. Perhaps it's only because they don't get food until they agree. But they go out and in the end find, if you can handle it expertly, that these people are trying well enough to know that he's committed an error. So I think mediation is something which should be included. The difficulty is always arise with the question of the cost of mediation. Who's going to pay that? And specific provision could be made that the state pay for mediation. Then the magistrate court question, Mr. Stoliani. I didn't get to the gist of the question. It is simply a specialized field in which the person who sits in front, whether he's a magistrate or judge, must have experience in this kind of field. And what I say is, let's not go the same way as previously done in the 75 Act, the compensation course. Then they could appoint ex-judges, they could appoint judges, they could appoint magistrates, but they invariably appointed some retired magistrate, because they didn't look too quite the time to do. And it suddenly became a disaster. It was just struck from the statute. There was a special commission which looked at this. Not as though it was just done as it were. Let's not do that again. Then I think I've answered the questions. Have you got anything? Okay, the use of the Landon's Court. My experience of the Landon's Court is that from the time that the commissioner came to go to court and the proceedings are finished, you've got one judge allocated to it. It does it in a very informal way. He even calls you for pre-trial conferences on telephones, etc., etc. It is really a good court to be in. And where there are expropriations in terms of the Restitution Act, I do think that the Land Claims Court is going to be best suited to do expropriations, which happens in Section 43 of that Act, and in cases where the court orders that an expropriation should be taken for purposes of restitution, of restoration rather than restitution. Because some of these cases also end up on the basis of, you see, if someone have indeed been compensated, he was expropriated by the apartheid government in 1965, and he was expropriated, he was compensated, then the question arises, was he compensated enough? And then historical valuation has got to be done. To say, well, he only got about 60% of what the value of that property was, so we take the difference and update it to today. And that is part of this compensation question. It becomes part of the expropriation conversation, because you've got to pay back if you've been compensated. And that court is then suited to look at all those issues, because that kind of issue you don't get in the usual high court of expropriation. And most of the judges won't be able to understand what this talking is about on the restitution side, because they simply haven't got experience. So I think that as far as that act is concerned, one should bring in the Land Claims Court for the determination of compensation with an appeal to the Supreme Court of Appeal and the Constitutional Court. I think then I've asked the question.
It was not political ideology that matters in the actually a moral question that the Constitution of the Republic acknowledges as well, but those genes were crimes against humanity. If you believe in the law, I'm not making a delusional statement when I say colonialism was a criminal capital. It's not actually an ideological question. It's the law. If you give what organization did, you go to prison. And that's democratic. Now, let's forget for a bit. I'm not going to renew what I will read in the rest of the public, but I'd like to understand. So here is a ECOM. ECOM wants to build power lines. Came yesterday, they were demonstrating a lot of problems that most landowners, they use the word to be cultivation. I think that's the main the attitude of landowners in most of the cases has in some instances delayed projects for 6 years. So let's say you are in District 8. Now we know the history of District 8. District 6 plus. Here in Cape Town, that's across the street. District 6. Or District 6, not 8. Or Woodspace in Zimbabwe. Where a farm, lots and lots of farms. I mean, there's no dispute that there was also a removal there. And ECOM wants to build power lines for a public sector. ECOM is not a profit-making company. It's not owned by, like, in a sense, it's not like profiteering an individual. It's all of us, for the whole country. It's not sitting a family like Anglo-American or something. Doesn't belong to Jacob's Zuma. It belongs to the people in the sense. If ECOM wants to take land in this age of Woodspring, why should it pay District 6? Why should it pay Majesty? If it's appropriating land for a public use, why should Telecom, why should government pay for the land that it's going to use for the rest of us? If it has proven that this is public purpose, this is for, I can't remember which one means public interest, public purpose, but if it has proven that this is for a good public use, why should it pay a compensation, number one? If you can't agree on that, I don't think you must pay any compensation. But two, if you say you must pay compensation, why should it be much a value? Why can't I just say, we're taking this part of you, we're destroying your house, we'll locate you and build you your own house. If they're taking what I'm saying, okay, we'll pay you this much. But not market value. Can we take Malamala for an example, Jefferson? Government pay billions of rent. Why should they pay that much for land that was proven that it was historically an unjust land to have been in the hands of such families? Why should we pay market value if we can prove that something is of public use? Forget history. Just get me. Public use, what? It's a public benefit. Why should you pay compensation? One, two, why should you pay market value? Thank
you. Thank you, Chair. Mr. Pereira, I think we acknowledge the fact that we understand the fact that you acknowledge that you represent the capital in this issue. My question to you is that you seem to be selected. Because we know for a fact that the apparent government is subsidized a lot of farmers, which automatically is a decision. And then that what gave you the market value that you are saying is that this same government, this new government, is my point and here for that value. Because we are saying that even the value that is increased, the value that you are talking about now, it was on the basis of a government that was not properly constituted. Now you want to on that side you want to stay away from that point and say it's not benefit there. So but you want to push that market value to this new government to say but you must pay me on the market value because now there's this issue of this market value that's why they say even this conversation is not then because
what exactly do you have? It was through the development of that land by the contribution by the government. And we think that was enough compensation there. And again, the issue of land, now that you are, you still want to say no, you don't want to get to the politics of it, which we respect that. But the colonial government, it did possession of land. It was done so that very few of the citizens can benefit. So now, why it can't go in that way? Because those people that surrendered them, they benefited from that government. Now, when you say it's a political issue, that is what we need to bring on board today. How do you compensate the same people on things that they benefited from that government? Because now we are being selected. You did not say at that time, or your people that are surrendered at that time, no, we're benefiting from things that are done wrongly by the government that are doing crime against humanity. At that time, your people accepted that and they were happy with it. Now you want to defend yourself from that and say, this is what we benefited from. And that's something we're not agreeing on. So we want to tell you. And lastly, even this property, very well. Who are these people in this country? Because most of them, it's the same people that come from that regime. So they're sitting there, they're the ones again who are. That's why you even go and try to say our party is going to do that. Because there's a certain sector of the population that has given themselves the permission of being this property.
I'd
like to bring the opportunity to the parliamentary legal advisor. And I would also plead with members. We have several other presentations. It would help us, it would help me, if you could kindly endeavor as far as possible to be concise, articulate your point so that others get an opportunity as well. Madam?
Thank you, Secretary. I would like to make a comment in respect of the issue of the speaking as well as the issue of arbitration. I'll just try to lump the two comments. The first thing that I would like to make is if the presenter is seeing challenges which are realistic, in the scope of our magistrate court and the legal skills and all of that, that comment is obviously relevant to High Court as well. Because if you don't have skills in the magistrate court, the High Court is not a specialized court to deal with issues that we're dealing with, which is more or less the same. But what I would like to bring to the attention of the committee, which I think is imperative, is not to be mindful of section 25, section 2B of the Constitution that talks about, this one is going to be linked with the issue of arbitration, that talks about the issue of compensation to if the parties don't agree, it must be approved by a court. Because obviously in our jurisdiction there is a meaning, the meaning of the court is specific, what is a court. The reason I'm saying that is there are more disadvantages if you read out of the prudence on arbitration than on the issue of approaching the court. And my understanding in the presentation, the other presentation, was that the reason we're looking into other alternative dispute resolutions or other ways of dealing with the issue of expropriation was more based on people cannot afford to approach the court. Now, if we take the point of arbitration, first of all, the arbitration is more expensive than our court. And jurisprudence to that effect. And secondly, this means therefore the lower end of the market is not going to be able to afford arbitration in any end. That's the first point. The second point would be even if they can afford the award of the arbitration final, which means therefore after you have approached the arbitrator, then what you do, the award, you don't get the award, there are very limited options after you've done that. That's why I'm saying we need to look into the meaning of section 25 or section 2B that talks about the court. And also due to the meaning of the word. So I just wanted to make those two comments.
Thank you very much for your contribution. I'm sure that members will also pay that heed the contribution that you've made as we think about all the matters concerned. Your concluding remarks.
My concluding remark is that we've got a good piece of potential legislation. I think it only needs some technical adjustments because when things about these things come up, then if practical person as far as Muslim policy is concerned, must have come in. That's
to my very good friend Daniel Mpofu, who will be able to tell him what the law is on whether the previous government is illegal to the sense, in the sense that legal consequences do not flow from acts undertaken by the court, by the government. I think Mr. Mpofu would be able to advise you even from his own ideological point of view. I'm not taking this further. As far as the High Court is concerned, it is every judge the High Court is not specialized in this area. But the judges president of these different High Courts in the country, they do know what the specialization of the judges are, and they awarded that. I've been asked to come in here, I've acted since 1992, virtually every second year as judge. And I'm often asked to come and please help us with an expropriation case or a mineral law question. So the judges are quite mindful, the judges president, about the specialization necessary for instance. I'm not denigrating the expertise of magistrates or the magistrate court. Far from that, I think they are especially good as far as criminal law is concerned, under difficult circumstances. But not this one. As far as the arbitration section 25 of the Constitution is concerned, the legal advisor made a very good point, which I have to ponder, whether the Constitution will allow that. But I do not think that the Constitution will exclude Section 75, where parties agree to an arbitration that then must go to court. And she's making a point of honor, but I think the ponder is going my way at this stage. It may be that it might look into it further than that is what. But I do think you should consider that. And as far as the question of finality of the proceedings before an arbitrator is concerned, and nowadays there are appeals possible, the parties do agree to appeals. And it's usually heard by three arbitrators. And as far as the cost question is concerned, then it becomes extension of market really expensive. Therefore, it's only for those high profile cases, really. The arbitration will not serve the bottom end of the market for unless an expensive arbitration for a very, very good case. That also happens, someone in the office of the advocate or whoever. And arbitration can take various forms, not only a formal one which is according to the rules of the High Court or the AFSA rules. It can be quite informal, where the arbitrator is appointed as an expert. And he can go and look for the evidence, and he can question the parties, he can go and question the various people who advise on the value. So there are many possibilities if you say the word arbitrate. You can rather do it like they do in European courts, where the judge actually takes over and questions witnesses. And that can be done on the basis of appointing an arbitrator as an expert. It's very cheap and easy. But those are things that will come up in practice. Perhaps we'll be hearing your questions. I think I've answered the questions.
Thank you very much for your input, sir. Deputy Minister, I would like to move you around the app. Very much for your attention. Thank you much. And also thank you much to Edward Kokola and Sokoa. Just very quickly to run through the state. First of all, thank you very much for the point about the jurisdictional variance for the High Court. I think that's a point that we've taken forth that one doesn't want to thank you much. Thank you for that point. In terms of the major step call, again, regardless of your specific experience in this, especially my lack of any experience in this space,
We did do a biology, bring in the medical. My understanding is that it would only be in the area of up to 300,000 rand for the compensation, so there's a limitation on what can be said. So we'd like still to think about that. But certainly we'll think about it. In terms of the 20 days, etc., again, you come to your to experience, so it's very useful that you're doing that experience that we're there and raise the issue with us. I think the important thing for the members of the committee to understand is that the those time issues, the time and so forth, occur after expiration rather than before. And therefore, typically for governments and something like Airbus, which is mentioned by from there the issue is not about the compensation issue. That's not the problem. The problem is to move ahead and not delay a huge cost. The rolling out of the transmission lines and so forth. So I think we can certainly look to be more generous in terms of time, in terms of dealing with the compensation dimension. So thank you for opening that. I'm pleased that you say that 25.3 is wonderfully flexible. But I think we're getting into maybe a false debate. But what you're saying, and it's not an ideological debate, not to those who say that I'm not ideological, that's another matter. The clearly, from a practical point of view, it might make sense to begin with what is the current market value of people's property when it comes to the property land. That quickly starts to become an argument that that's the central issue, which is not what you want. And it's certainly not the constitutional court, so we must move away from the number of objections to say that. Section 25 CPD does not demark a value of central role due to the context of section. So I think that the practical issues, the colorless issues, as you put it, might well begin with what is the current market value, and then what should be deducted from it, or add to it in terms of a variety of other considerations. So I think let's not get into the wrong bit. Also, just on Gascon matter, and now I'm more responding to the colleague from the Honourable from EFF. The problem with Gascon is the cases of the day that we're not appropriation cases. It was a series of a willing seller, willing buyer approach. And we're answering the majority of those set up, the majority of property owners willingly provided services and consulted a little bit of a fund away before a person. But a couple held out speculatively to drive up a price and to drive a desperation of Airbus, which was at a huge amount of money that construction teams and on site and they're really complete as well. And that's why this bill becomes so important. We need to have, in a case like that, we need to have the conviction of government and all the good legislation that is constitutionally compliant. So that those who rolled out and really said or really buy it said no, that we are prepared to use. I should be prepared to use appropriation, not as the first year, but it needs to be said. And I think that that's not very important to have the confidence of the latest constitution to comply with the law general application that we're writing. There's a confession, but it's not a confession. The largest property owner in South Africa, in terms of building state properties, that's an asset, and a member, an active member of Sukoa, is sort of on the public list. Okay. And that's why we mustn't imagine that the transformation of the property sector is simply about appropriation, which is where the silver list is used there. There's a range of things that we must provide to ensure that there is a much more equitable South Africa, including the property itself. And therefore, as the Department of Public Works, which I understand is the, by a factor of 7, the largest property owner in South Africa, Growpoint, I think it's the second largest. Whether we handle our property effectively in some of those matters, which we're doing. But, so, it's not a question so much only of white or black ownership, so that's not an important issue, but it's a public ownership. And so I just wanted to make that additional point. So, unbeknownst to you, as a guest, Kola, you were also representing us. We can discuss arguments, however, otherwise you didn't have any attention for this. So, there's very useful practical which is used to up, and we welcome that point, that we've got a little piece of property.
Deliberating in the presentation of mentoring.
Madam, you are welcome. Since you are now representing the Chile, as soon as you are ready, you will commence your presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and to the honorable present as well. You will see from the presentation that I handed out, it's the one with the biggest font. I do apologize, I was a bit in a hurry, and I don't see some space where I am, but do you perceive a few, but the ones the biggest spot, please. As you heard, I'm the president of the Cape Chamber of Commerce and Industry, and this afternoon, not only have I had the same base to represent my own organization, which is 211 years old, and the benefit of Mr. Jorzy, established in 1804. It's the oldest chamber on the continent. I also have a mandate to represent SACI, South African Chamber of Commerce. Together, we represent approximately 23,000 businesses nationally across all sectors of the economy and who employ millions of people. The chamber is led by education business. The Chamber of Education Business, ladies and gentlemen, is extremely concerned at what appears to be an ill-conceived legislative program. The proposed legislation would diminish the constitutionality enshrined of our simple, very rights in person. It includes property rights, fixed, movable, and intellectual property rights. Should this legislative process proceed any further without radical modification and alignment to the Constitution as the Supreme Opinion Speaker and Deputy Minister, foreign direct investment in South Africa will be severely curtailed and discouraged. This is the long-term detriment of South Africa and our future generations. As an attorney, I am getting numerous queries for opinions from businesses wanting to invest in South Africa, but are extremely cautious for not doing so in the light of this proposal. Ladies and gentlemen, the dangers are evident to South Africa, our own people, and foreigners in the proposed legislation, ECHO, has already been published, but has not yet approved, as you know. The key problem, and we believe the heart of the matter, is the redrafting of the ECHO Prohibition Act of 1975. We agree and we believe, and I share everybody else's position, that there is a need to amend the existing Appropriation Act to bring it in line with our Constitution. We believe that the proposals in the 2015 bill go way beyond that. It goes too far. The present legislation says that property may only be expropriated for public purposes such as the building of the roads. The new version, ladies and gentlemen, extends expropriation to in the public interest. In the existing legislation, only the Minister of Public Works may expropriate property, and this is only after the Minister has obtained a court order, which was much discussed earlier.
It goes without saying that the state and the current landowner have had an opportunity to state their case in court if needed. The proposed legislation, the power to expropriate, is extended to all organs of state and no court order is required. Not concerning, no court order is required. The notice of expropriation states the amount offered and the owner has 60 days in which to object and litigate on the amount offered, the compensation offered. If he or she does not do so in this time period, the landowner is deemed to have accepted the offer. In terms of the bill, the state takes possession of the property straight away, as has been alluded to earlier, and leaves the owner to object in court if he or she has the wherewithal to do so. Bearing in mind that the state already has possession of this previous owner's property. The formula for compensation has also changed. In the existing legislation, the state must pay the market value of the property, let discount factors such as the history of the property and the extent to which it has benefited previously, including subsidies, etc. In addition, the state has to pay damages and usually a small salary. Currently, the state has to pay at least 8% of the agreed price when it takes possession of the property and is legally bound to pay interest on this outstanding stage. The new rule, Honourable Ladies and Gentlemen, is still unclear on the issue of interest payment. The issue of market value is not guaranteed and the payment is determined by a state failure. The bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, this is not acceptable. No damages, compensation, or life suffering also not in to be paid. And just to prevent the question or try to jump the gun with the EF question, this is, you suffered damages.
No. I would like to reserve special attention to the chair.
Sure.
And not
you apologize for that.
Organization, otherwise you would make my meeting.
I do apologize, yes. No damages, sir. In other words, it's compensation for life, suffering, or scolarium is to be paid. All the power invested in the state as officials. The previous owner has no real bargaining power or recourse, except to go to court on the value as determined by the state valuer. It is important to take cognizance of the fact, as we all know, that the value of the agricultural land is largely determined by access to water for irrigation. In terms of the National Water Policy Review, the Ministry is authorized to promote the transfer of water rights. And I quote, ladies and gentlemen, the authorization to use water for productive purposes is radically transformed to align it with the demographic reality of South Africa and serve to support black empowerment and the development of an inclusive economy. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there's absolutely nothing wrong there. However, given this new power in the hands of the state, the farmer, under the text of expropriation, is powerless and in no position to interfere in the bargaining process. Expropriation by any organ of state without the court order would inevitably lead to abuse without any real checks and balances. We believe many of the provisions of the bill are unconstitutional as has been alluded to. Our common law protects people from unauthorized taking or expropriating the inventory of property. Even a weapon or a gun that may have been used in a murder can be taken without a legal process, namely the warrant. Not even a tenant in arrears may be evicted, and likely so, without a court order obtained. The bill seeks the court process entirely prior to the expropriation. Another pertinent point to bring to here is the new land holding bill, which limits farmers to 12,000 hectares or 2 bonds. Is a further intrusion on property rights and a form of forced expropriation. Ladies and gentlemen, you might, if you agree with me, you will see why I raised this bill yesterday. It is unrealistic for all land, as all land is not equal. The farmer's 12,000 hectares of stony grain land can possibly not be compared to a farmer's 12,000 hectares of lush green arable land in a high rainfall area. The bill, unfortunately, makes less sense in terms of productive agriculture leaving one with little option but to see a justification for forced expropriation. This should be seen in conjunction with the final policy proposal on strengthening the relative rights of people working the land, which requires 30% of the land to be expropriated without compensation for farm workers. In many cases, smaller remaining portions of the land will not be viable. Where does this lead people who were intended to benefit by this policy? Any such policy, we believe, would be disastrous for agriculture and vegetable food production. We believe there are different ways of addressing that. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, you may ask, why do I raise this here? Modern farming is becoming more intensive as new technology is produced to make the land more productive. Factory farms require capital investment, but investment will surely come to halt if the security of land ownership is removed and replaced by the possibility of expropriation with inadequate compensation which the bill will result in. This is much unfortunate and clearly, hopefully, an unintended consequence thereof. The combined effect of this legislation and the new legislation proposed will undermine land value, making expropriation easier and less expensive, setting the scene for the large-scale disposition of productive agricultural land. We are further concerned in reference to the urban land, the new province, and I put it in inverted commas, for easy expropriation will create insecurity for commercial and industrial property owners. It will devil the orderly development in terms of approved town planning schemes. Large developers need to achieve economies of scale in order to build affordable homes. Commercial property owners will be reluctant and already reluctant to invest in the uncertainty around the security of ownership which has already been seen. This comes at a time when the need for better housing has never been greater. As you know, the 2015 expropriation bill in its current form allows for expropriation of immovable, movable, or intellectual property. Potentially, this means that the state could expropriate all businesses, retail prices, plants, equipment, pharmaceutical patents, international product license, and software programs, or any other IT applications, all in the public interest. Ladies and gentlemen, is this what was envisaged by the law? Unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, the logical consequence of the 2015 expropriation bill and several pieces of legislation currently before Parliament is that new objectives of the National Development Plan or other economic development policies of the government will be achieved. It is clearly counterproductive to the goals of the National Development Plan. Local and foreign investors and skilled citizens will find other countries in which to invest their capital, expertise and energy. We therefore call you, Parliament, to amend rather than replace the Expropriation Act in the interest of all the people of South Africa. And most importantly, ladies and gentlemen, our future generations. In conclusion, I respectfully urge that the national government consider this submission in a positive light in order to simplify and streamline business process, thereby cutting through the bureaucracy that hinders the development of our economy as this bill will most certainly do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Good folks, may I suggest that we break for lunch and return at a 1:15. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.